This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Tan Chung Han, and the morning run begins.
Good morning.
Good morning. And it's Wednesday, hump day, as we call it. You know, sort of get over this. We're into the short stretch towards the weekend.
The weekend, yeah. No, first full week in a while
now.
People
get the impression that we live for these weekends. That, you know, this is all we're concerned about. We're not really concerned about what happens between the weekends, but what happens on the weekend.
Well, I mean, let's not try and downplay the importance of the morning run, but let's also not downplay the importance of the weekend. You know what I'm saying?
I was not talking about the morning run. I was talking about the weekday, the weekdays.
Well, my weekdays are primarily centered on the morning run.
And the young minds that you mold, yes. Like so much silly putty, you know, waiting to find its shape. Extraordinary commitment to the future there, Han. You know, tears welling up my eyes. Well, actually, tears welling up my eyes because I sprayed deodorant accidentally into my eye. Well, not sprayed it. Anyway, beyond me, lots of things happening in the world of greater importance, including tensions on the Korean Peninsula with a missile launched there. And I think North Korea claiming that it has launched successfully an intercontinental ballistic missile. And of course, attempts to verify whether the North Korean claims are true, that this missile actually has that capacity. And I believe that some experts are suggesting that it's true and that the intercontinental ballistic missile might be able to reach as it goes towards the Pacific and towards the Americas, almost towards Russia, I mean to Alaska rather, and you know that Sarah Palin should watch out.
And also given that there is this rift between China and the U.S. on the global stage, you recall earlier this week, Chinese President Xi Jinping spoke about a negative turn in relations between Beijing and Washington. So you've, you know, amidst those tensions, then you've got North Korea certainly ramping up their, you know, missile tests, or at least allegedly ramping up their missile tests. And, you know, that could very much be a thorn in the side, you know, not just for, at least a thorn in the relations between Beijing and Washington.
Yeah, I think what we see is Donald Trump rather sort of flip-flopping on his views on China vis-a-vis North Korea, suggesting that they've not done enough or that they could do. And he's been supportive of the Chinese, you know, and I think his recent tweet, unfortunately, continues with his tweet-based diplomacy, making statements, which really shouldn't come through Twitter, but he, for some reason, hasn't been persuaded this is a bad idea, saying that he hopes that the Chinese you know, put pressure on North Korea to stop this or pull back on these actions. So a lot of that there. Also in Malaysia, we had yesterday the case of the two brothers, the Batumele brothers, who were executed, you know, before their legal remedies were exhausted. So that became an issue in the Malaysian press. I don't know, because in Malaysia, we don't announce when people are executed, you know, using the death penalty when they are. There's usually very little publicity. And I think this is the compact between government and the media not to draw attention to executions. But as a consequence, sometimes you don't know when exactly an execution happened. But we'll get more details of that later. But I believe the lawyers for the families have come out to ask for an explanation as to why the two were executed before they were, you know, before the legal remedies were exhausted. Mm. So anyway, we'll be back with more exciting news. After this, we have Janis Joplin and Summertime, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Tan Chun Han and myself, Sharad Kutan. I was going to say Koo Soo Chuang, because you don't look anything like that young man. He's not bald and, not bald. Well, you know. Well, actually, you're not bald. You're technically speaking, your head's shaven.
Let's just say, thank God this is radio. Now, moving on.
Okay, that was Janis Joplin and Summertime, a beautiful, haunting piece. Now, you know, I don't know if you watched this. There's a little video that went viral, or at least got the attention of lots of people, with Prince Charles and his concert. Prince Charles, because being the heir apparent to the British throne, and his consort Camilla Parker Bowles. I believe they were in Canada on a tour, and they were treated to an exhibition of Inuit throat singing. Now, apparently, so this is a tradition using, I quite explain it, but you use your vocal cords and there's a song that's produced as a consequence. You know, because otherwise known more popularly as Eskimo people, and you know, Eskimos, but Inuit is actually the proper name for the community. Mm. And Camilla starts to laugh and she starts to chuckle, and then so does Charles. And the media speculation was that they were chuckling over the Inuit throat singing. Mm. And I think diplomacy is a really tricky thing these days because there's so many cameras on you. Charles' father, of course, was very famous for a lot of kind of faux pas, saying really odd things about foreign cultures. And I'm not quite sure whether the Inuit people would have taken exception to that particular instance. Did you see that?
No, I did not see
lucky
that.
Lucky you. Yeah. Man, lucky you.
But I guess on the other end of the spectrum of, you know, diplomacy, I mean, you've got the more subtle forms of diplomacy as evidenced by Justin Trudeau, like the Canadian of Canada, because apparently there's this article here about how he seems to it's actually not him. It was a visit to Ireland recently. Yeah, and the Irish Prime Minister was wearing a Canada socks.
Yeah, okay. So
Canadian theme socks.
Canadian theme. So he had a maple leaf and a Canadian Mountie. This is, I think, a policeman on a, right, or a mountain policeman or something. And they're kind of striking and they have a particular image. But the reason that the Prime Minister of Ireland, Leo Varadkar, because very famous because he's newly minted and he's 38 years old and he's openly gay and his father's an Indian doctor and his mother's an Irish nurse, all those kinds of things. Anyway, so Justin Trudeau comes over to Dublin, and in order to, so it's a nod to Justin Trudeau's sock diplomacy. So Justin Trudeau's been famous for wearing themed socks different occasions. So I think he wore at one time a sock with an id theme plus a pride theme on the other leg during a march. So he was kind of like celebrating both occasions simultaneously.
And he also wore, I believe, Star Wars themed socks recently as well.
So this is part of his, I guess, media outreach or creating a spectacle around him. Leo Varadkar kind of goes along with that and has the Canadian theme socks. But I'm wondering if all this is just silliness. I mean, do you think that we don't want our politicians having too much fun at our expense on the public purse? They really should just be focusing on real issues rather than creating little bits and bites for the media.
Well, I guess, you know, as long as there is enough of a policy push behind these sock diplomacies, then yeah, sure, you know. And I guess it very much depends on who pulls it off as well, right? Because if, let's say,
Donald pulls off the socks.
Yeah. I mean, because like just a few minutes ago, we were talking about how Trump rules by tweet, right? You know, and he seems to kind of let his hair down in that sense. Now, if socks is going to be Justin Trudeau's, way of letting his hair down, by all means, sure.
Well, I believe that Donald Trump cannot let his hair down because it's permanently welded to his head. But more importantly is that the difference is here is just a kind of a gesture, while Donald Trump is actually making policy statements and positions, in foreign relations that perhaps were better done behind closed doors.
Now, one could even say that, you know, then Justin Trudeau is then showing his hand, or in this case his, or not really his ankles, you know, in terms of, you know, his bias when it comes to policy. So he's obviously, you know, pro LGBT, you know, and there's also a pro inclusion, with the theme socks and whatnot. So you have that, but again, at the same time, I guess it very much depends on who pulls off these kinds of, you know, softer forms of diplomacy. Because, I mean, let's face it, if let's say Trump goes about and starts showing off his socks, I dare say it'll be met with a whole lot of criticism, you know, versus, say, somebody as likable as Justin Trudeau.
Okay, so what to do it's with. A likability factor mm-hmm. of the those involved, as opposed to, you know, the substance of the gesture that right. you're saying that is important. I don't know if you think, I can think of no Malaysian politician that's engaged in this. Though, now that it's happened, I'm not quite sure if we're going to get a copycat situation here. Yeah, do you think, socks. Is it likely? I know Twitter is really socks. Big with Malaysian politicians, mm-hmm. Sometimes to their own detriment. But the more important thing is, you know, will we see copycat sock diplomacy here? We wait and see. We'll look, have to ask them to lift the cuffs of their pants up. So we got to look at their ankles. Next up, Prince, Raspberry Beret, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Raspberry Beret by Prince. The late Prince, I must say, with deep sadness. He went too soon. What a musical genius. Tan Chung Han yeah. and myself, Sharad Kutin. I know you're trying to be agnostic about things, but you can't always, well, you can't, you know, you can't be neutral on a moving train. Now, I'm going to put, I mean, I want to actually, before we get into the subject that we want to get into, which is Barbie dolls, just to say, issue some clarification. In fact, on the question of the Batamale brothers, they were executed on March the 15th. I've got those dates now. And they were convicted of a murder of a man called Krishna and Raman, but the family had filed a clemency appeal in late February, and so that clemency appeal had not been exhausted. That's what we meant by legal remedies, right? Ways of stopping the execution. Also, now become quite controversial is the question of whether the execution was botched, whether in fact it was carried in a way that was, I don't know if you can call a hanging humane, but as humanely as possible. Very quickly, Han, do you have a position on the death penalty? Are you for or against it, or unsure?
Well, I'm going to cop out here, and you know, I guess it really depends on the context of that society, right? Because if you're going to subscribe to this notion that, you know, there are certain crimes that are just plain unforgivable and there's no turning back, there's no hope of redemption, then, you know, that...
What, a lifetime sentence?
Well, perhaps, but then it's still, then there's talk about how that comes at a cost, right? And then taxpayers have to keep funding this person, right, in the system. But there is the other side of the argument as well now, because if you're saying there is hope for redemption and that this person can be assimilated, you know, going back to this whole nature versus nurture topic that we spoke about earlier this week, then, yeah, you can see how death penalty will totally scupper any chances of this person being reintegrated and rehabilitated and being a productive member of society, right?
Yeah, so I think after 1 minute listening to you, I'm...
It wasn't 1 minute, it was like 20 seconds.
Well, I'm completely against the death penalty, and I think it's inhumane, and I think Malaysia should stop this policy of having the death penalty. But
so
that's
okay. Since you have a position on it, and then, you know, so let's say, you know, are there crimes that are just nothing.
So I would not go, because I know that the emotive strategy for advocates of the death penalty is always to look at the murder of children or the rape murder of children as a way. And I think if you see around the world how sometimes people are falsely accused and are convicted falsely also, and that the criminal justice system is not perfect, that we should never give the state the right to execute people, because they could be executing, one, an innocent person. Two, I think even that person was guilty, that the state should not have a right to execute or take a life. And I think that's a burden. You say there's a cost burden involved in imprisoning people. Well, it's a burden that we should, and it's better than killing somebody. That's my position. That's my position. Okay. Coming to other serious matters like Barbie dolls, apparently a survey has been done to show that the majority of Malaysians are unlikely to let their boy child play with a Barbie doll. Now, if you had children, Han, what would your position be? If your son wanted to play with a Barbie, what would you be saying?
Well, okay, again, I can understand the results from the survey, you know, by Malaysians, because, again, generally speaking, Malaysians are a fairly conservative bunch. You know? So if trying to reinforce gender identities from young and by way of toys and how they fill up their leisure time, then, you know, I can understand why Malaysians are adverse to letting male...
Averse, I think.
Yeah. averse, yeah, to having boys play with Barbie dolls, right? But you.
So, what is it? You think that's happening when a boy plays with a Barbie doll? Is it that the boy is and a girl is parents imagine modeling themselves on the Barbie doll?
Right.
Is that what is happening, or could it just be I'm having fun with something that's very different from myself?
No, but perhaps, but a lot of child's play is imitation, right? So, like from discussions with parents and even my peers who are now parents. You know, you want to impose this, and I'm using air quotes here, right values and right norms, right? And so is it normal within that context for a boy to play with a Barbie
doll? Okay, would you allow your girl child to play with a Barbie doll, considering that the body image of a Barbie is unattainable by any human female?
Right, I think the body of any action figure, not even He-Man, is unattainable. I mean,
put no, that's not true.
Well, yeah, maybe. But put He-Man in a dad bod, okay, then we'll talk, okay? Okay, now, for this issue, I actually have a stance here whereby if it was my personal children, as opposed to my non-personal children. So if it's my children, I'm okay with it. No, so, but then again,
so you would allow your girl, your daughter, to play with Barbie,
the trucks, yeah.
And would you allow your son to play a truck?
Yeah, go for it. You know, so that would be my personal stance. But again, you know, I understand the results from this survey. Because we are still on the conservative part of the spectrum.
Well, you know, what I think is amazing, though, we always underrate the imaginative potential of children. So you can deny them a Barbie doll, but if they wanted to play with the Barbie doll, they can play with that Barbie doll in their minds. And there's nothing to stop a child from imagining themselves. And so taking away that physical, expression of that doesn't help, doesn't do very much. Well, I've had the last word, but because there isn't a last word, not on the BFM, not on the morning show. We're coming up to the news shortly, but before that, we have Radiohead and High and Dry, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard. I'm sure it couldn't. With me, Tan Chung Han. I was going to say Kun Soo Chuk.
Again.
I don't know.
Man.
I miss him.
Well, I miss him too.
Yeah, he was here only yesterday. But, you know, we go every week without, it seems, without some new controversy breaking out. We've been talking about the Shell poster girl and that issue. And I'm going to come back to that. But very quickly, also, there's this whole Bajaya Naza wedding kerfuffle over Sonko and, you know, presumed racist comments that have come out on Facebook. And, you know, I just want to say to my fellow Malaysians, take a chill pill, everybody relax, and maybe, you know, a bit of emotional and intellectual generosity would do us all a lot of good, don't you think?
And apparently this time around, it stems from some postings by Chinese-speaking netizens who allegedly made some racist comments, and so this sparked the latest controversy.
Yeah,
it just never ends.
Yeah, and it doesn't. And, you know, those two young people, I mean, they might be from the 1%, but they too are allowed to fall in love. And lead a life of bliss. You know, I mean, nothing more to be said, right? Yeah, on that,
I wish I could get into that 1%. Man.
Ah, you see, so this is resentment. This is social jealousy. This is what is. Then that fuels
pure jealousy.
And I think a lot of this fuels the way we comment about the rich and the glamorous and the celebrities and the in every opportunity to take them down a peg.
Hold on. Let me clarify here. Look, this is wholesome form of jealousy, if there's such a thing. Look,
I don't know.
I'm not going to deny them their bliss.
Is one of the seven deadly sins.
I'm not going to deny them their bliss. By all means, go for it. But here I am. It's like, I wonder if I could have enjoyed those kind of luxuries.
Long ago, our ancestors noted that envy is a sin, along with lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, and pride. Okay. Kind of pride, not the rainbow pride. Okay. Now, coming back to the Shell model. So we were talking about it yesterday, I was with Kun Soo Chuk, and one of our listeners wrote in and said, you're very insensitive. And I want to say, first of all, apologize if there was this feeling that, you know, when two men talk about women's issues, they tend to be tone deaf, or at least they tend not to have the kinds of nuances that a woman or a person who's very, very sympathetic to that position would feel necessary to make, right? So we, I believe, made all the necessary qualifications. We didn't want to trivialize the matter, but we said, was this so important when the nation is facing larger challenges? So that was then read as trivializing or downplaying the importance of seeing, suggesting there was a hierarchy of importance in terms of issues. And we all, of course, none of us would suggest that, neither of us, rather, would suggest that sexual violence against women is not important, an issue for this country to come to grips with.
Well, but given the fact that it has garnered a lot of attention and the fact that you guys were speaking about it yesterday, I think, you know, having seen the pictures as well, you know, it is not something that we want to condone. Well, certainly we do not condone it, right? Because, you know,
not condone, but not necessarily condemn either in quite the fashion, right? So the question is whether the language you use to describe those acts, and I believe the young men who are involved in those acts and who posted those images have come out to apologize.
Right. But you know, is this something that, you know, we don't want to condemn, right? Because I think it needs to be, because given the kind of actions or acts that were played out on this cardboard, is that something that should be elevated to the social consciousness? Should that be something that should have been acted out on, right? You know, because earlier we spoke about, you know, how, you know, here we had this survey about Malaysians trying to make sure that their boys, their children stay away or steer towards gender-specific toys, right? Because a lot of it is acting out what they are thinking, right? So I think in this case as well, actually, having them, these guys, actually act out those things, albeit on a card, on a cardboard cutout, I don't think that's something that really has a space in
right.
In
so
society, the
argument is made, and it's similar to the question of pornography and whether, you know, pornography is harmless or whether in fact it's the practice of rape, right? And so these arguments have been longstanding, the decades long discussion, the back and forth about the nature of these things. I believe that if you have an opinion of this, especially, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio or send us a WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 and tell us what you think about it. Because clearly people, and this conversation needs to be broadened, and in this, again, in this room, two men speaking about an issue where the lives of women and the bodies of women are implicated, and that seems to be inadequate also in the face of it.
I mean, it's one thing if, let's say, those guys had actually taken, like, say, just harmless, playful poses with them, you know, like just posing with a cutout or something. But again, given that they are acts were explicitly sexual in nature, again, I don't think there's any place for that, though.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And, you know, the argument goes back and forth. We live in a world where sexualized images of men and women are permissible and, in fact, promoted, and they're used to promote goods and services all the time. And then we get a very queasy and Victorian when certain lines are... and the question is, you know, whether there's a deep hypocrisy in our society. Some of us... would want our countries expunged, would have all these sexualized images expunged totally from public view. Some would say, well, okay, this is the nature of it. You educate your kids and make sure that they read those images in an intelligent fashion. I think that's two ends of the spectrum in terms of responses to the nature of, you know, consumer culture.
But at least in terms of, I think there's a very important distinction to be made here, though, because if, let's say, somebody poses, like, say, as a model for a magazine and there was the intention of, you know, portraying themselves in that light versus Noor Shafila Khairul Saleh, who obviously did not intend for her likeness to be portrayed in a sexualized manner. I think there's a distinction there, right? So,
well, you get the last word this time, Tan Chung Han. But now we have Eddie Kendricks and Keep on Truckin' after these messages. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Keep on Truckin' by Eddie Kendricks. I never heard of him before this, but lovely, lovely song, wasn't it? It sounds very familiar, but I didn't know the name Eddie Kendricks in relation to this. And anyway, I'm sure I'd cut it of the musical illiterate tribe.
And in that same tribe is Tan Chung Han. That's me.
Okay, but it was great music, and I hope it got your feet tapping and your body moving. I must say that, we're inundated with social media and also popular culture kind of on a almost 24/7 basis, right? And so I'm going to begin by making reference to a movie I watched on Netflix, and that was something called Space Station 76, and it's about this community in space, and they're far away from home, and there's a little girl in the story, and her parents say at one point, one of the parents said, explaining to another a new member of the crew, say, well, we don't let the kid, we don't have robots in our, you know, in our little cubicle because we grew up on Earth and we believe it's important to do things for yourself. And we don't want the child to only have robots serving her all the time. And I thought, oh, that's a very interesting attitude, right? That you don't want robots to serve you, since the utopian dream was of robots constantly right. serve you and, you know, fulfill every need and desire.
And not to say that that is a distant reality as well. It looks to be closer than we think.
Okay, right, so not similar, but on the spectrum is, of course, the question of the domestic helper. Mm. Not a robot, definitely a human being with feelings and desires and rights. But the question is, in serving the family, do kids get spoiled? And I don't know, Han, if you grew up with somebody who was a helper in the house.
Yeah, that's right. I was actually raised by my maids. And I think now, you know, given the tremendous demands on working parents, you know, and where you need a dual income household, I think helpers are seen as a necessity, you know, more than a luxury in today's urban middle class context. So this discussion here stems from an article in the South China Morning Post saying that apparently for Hong Kong's young, having a helper leaves them young, lazy, and spoiled. you know, for myself, having been raised by helpers,
because there's nothing of that in you.
Yeah,
I can't
totally.
See.
I mean, I am the role model. I'm kidding.
Of,
I don't know.
Of industry. So we spoke to somebody who might know better than you, Han.
Well, I've got first-hand experience.
But yeah, Joel Lowe, who is a psychologist with the Mind Psychological Services and Training, and we asked him how important exposure to hard work is for character development.
Well, to build character, that's an interesting question. I think it's necessary for us to be exposed to hard work. I think that's always important, because if we don't know what hard work is like or what it can do for us, then we are not inclined to do it. I mean, human beings are very simplistic in that sense. We tend to gravitate towards the path of least resistance. If we have an easier path ahead of us, we're always opt for that in that sense. But there's always, when you take the harder path, the more difficult paths, you know, we oftentimes get a lot more gains in that sense. So do we need to be exposed to it to build character? I wouldn't say necessarily so, but it will definitely help the cause, definitely.
Okay, that was Joel Lord, psychologist with the Mind Psychological Services and Training Group. What's your opinion? I mean, if he's saying it's kind of like...
Not necessary,
but it would be good if you had it.
Right. Well, I guess it goes back to this, you know, how do you define hard work to begin with? Because over generations, you know, that definition
washing your own clothes, okay. Cooking your own meals, cleaning house, I mean, on a domestic level, right?
Okay, right. So again, is that necessary?
Cleaning up after your pet... If you have a pet dog or a cat, if you leave it to the maid to clean up rather than deal with the consequences of having something like a pet.
Okay, well, you know, so that's your definition of hard work then. And I'm sure many families have different definitions of hard work. Do they want, and maybe our listeners right now, you know, do you want to have your kids actually, you know, doing these household chores, right? Because, then you can extend the argument to then why shouldn't a parent be doing that as well? So why even have a helper to begin with, right? It's because we shy away from these, I'm using air quotes here, menial tasks or these really mundane tasks so that we can be perhaps live a richer life. No, that's the idea of having that helper, right? So, how do you define hard work? So does it necessarily mean if a child does not cook, does not clean, does that mean that they will automatically turn out young, lazy, and spoiled? I think I'll go with Joel here and say, you know, that's not necessarily the case, right?
Okay. I'm giving you the last word here because you're clearly very sensitive, and because you grew up with a maid, you probably won't be able to take
it. And I'm grateful for that. I really am.
Oh, okay. Well, and we're grateful for the Beatles for Good Day Sunshine coming up before we hit the news at 7 a.m. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me Tan Chung Han, and it's time to talk about things that are animating conversations across the nation. One of them, of course, has been bullying. We've had a lot of tragic cases related to bullying, Han, over the last couple of months, you know, ending up in tragedy and death, and of course, a lot of fingers pointing at schools and whether the schools were responsible or negligent or ill-equipped to deal with the question of bullying. But some of the invisible victims of bullying in the school system are actually teachers. Mm. And it's a very curious point of view. So we spoke to Miss Mui. She was a former headmistress of Kampong Bahru School. And she gives us a sense of her experience of being bullied in a school context.
He said, "Good afternoon, Miss Mui." I said, "Yes." And he fumbled in his pocket and he brought out a gun and he put it on the table. He said, "Do you know who I am?" I said, "No, I don't know you." He said, "I am a taiko in this area and you have just suspended my nephew. I ask you please to bring him back." I said, "Look, your nephew doesn't know BM. I want him to learn BM." And so we chatted. And at the end of it, he said to me, "Well, Miss Moy, if you need any help to settle any gang problems, just give me a call." Oh. And he picked up his pistol and he walked out of my office. We parted on very friendly terms. I was so fortunate.
So that was Miss Moy, headmistress or former headmistress of Kampong Bahru School, talking about how having suspended one of her students, her uncle came visiting and he brought with him a gun. And, you know, so it's not kind of school antics, but this is more serious thuggery. But I believe that kids also sometimes threaten teachers and headmasters, headmistresses too.
Yeah, you know, and I think drawing upon references from peers who are fellow teachers here in Malaysia, and even tutors as well, it's not just the demands that are being placed on them by parents, but very often as students, you know, because they're acting out, you know, for whatever reason, they are also being really rebellious towards teacher. Now, I know I am using a really broad brush here, generally speaking, for my students, and perhaps some of you listening right now. You know, you guys have been great so far. So
angels,
thank you very much.
Hashtag.
Yes, is it reflective of the teacher?
Okay, okay. So you know, for all you apple polishers out there, you know what to do with Han. But you know, coming back to Miss Moy, so she gives a positive spin to the story. So she
unfortunately,
said she was able to speak to the uncle as an adult, the gun on the table notwithstanding, and come to some sort of agreement about the needs of her student and his nephew, right? In which case, I think in this instance, it was that he was failing his Bahasa Malaysia or being absent from Bahasa Malaysia's classes. The point being that, okay, you're negotiating with an adult. And mind you, some adults don't act like adults, but when you're dealing with children, especially teenagers, who are kind of on the cusp of being an adult and might not know the limits and consequences, full consequences of their actions, what do you do?
Well, I wish there was a silver bullet, you know, because obviously some of these teachers who have become victims of student bullies, at least that's according to the Education Minister, Dato' Sri Mahathir Khalid, saying that there have been such instances. And while in his view, the solution is to then go make a police report. But then, you know, any kind of repercussion might be delayed, right? And because you are having to deal with these children on a day-to-day basis, it's not like you have a cop or some other enforcer in a classroom with you all the time, right? So it seems like there has to be some capacity of the teacher having to deal with the situation on his or her own.
Yeah, right? I think, you know, when Miss Moy mentioned the gun, I thought to myself, you know, and even though it came to a kind of happy conclusion, I thought, well, shouldn't she actually inform the police, because the police ought to know that somebody is out there who calls himself a gangster, who, you know, actually is in possession probably of an illegal firearm, and that needs to be done. But if she did so, would she then open herself up to, in fact, repercussions? And, you know, and there's this really complicated right. matter, because while we know what the principles are, the realities, you know, often are much more difficult to negotiate. And I always wonder about that. And sometimes, you know, especially when you're dealing with teenagers, teenagers might actually physically be stronger than the teachers themselves. And so they could be quite threatening to the teacher, who now confronted by, you know, a 16-year-old with the body of a 24-year-old.
Right.
What do you do in that kind of instance?
And also, you know, when you think about how the responsibility or the burden of proof is actually going to be on the teacher, and then if the teacher were to go out and say, you know, hey, I've been bullied by my students, you know, that is a narrative that is rather the exception, not the norm, right? Because it's you find it hard to digest, like, what? A student bullying a teacher? Then the teacher will then have to go through the burden of actually proving that he or she has been subject to bullying from the student, right? Well, then it becomes a lot more complicated. It becomes a lot more harder.
The teacher has at their disposal witnesses potentially.
Yeah.
And I think the school tend to align themselves with the teachers rather than the kids. But be that as it may, I think the issue of bullying continues to be a difficult one, because ultimately it's about these complex human relationships. And there's no silver bullet. I hate to use violent metaphors as you do, so cavalierly, Han there. But, you know, it is about human relationships. And we're never going to find a solution that fits everything unless we turn ourselves into robots and program kids to behave as angels. And they don't come that way, do they? They come with all kinds of complex backstories.
Influences.
You know, a kid is abused at home, comes to school and acts out. I mean, you know, the violence that he or she experiences at home then is acted out in the context where they can pick on somebody more vulnerable than themselves, for instance, or, you know, and how do you solve that problem? And I've been in situations when I did some voluntary work with, you know, working class kids, you know, knowing that the kid is being abused at home and then acting out in, you know, in this case, this tuition center where I was helping out. And so how do you deal with these complex relationships? You're not going to change. If I went and confronted the father, he'd probably just say, thank you very much, and then beat up the kid after I left.
Or so, beat you up, yeah.
Well, you know, beating me up would be easier to deal with, right? Because I can defend myself, but I can't defend the child.
Correct.
You know, because I'm not there all the time.
Yeah, right? And I recall during my time doing, you know, similar social work in the States as well with kids from less well-to-do families as well. While we were having these weekend classes, you would actually hear gunshots going off, like, you know, a couple of blocks away. You know, you have those kind of instances. So knowing that these kids are raised in these kind of environments, I recall one of the advisors, you know, telling us that basically these moments that you have with the children hopefully will go some ways towards stemming that negative tide of, you know, of negative, or that tide of negative influence on that child. Now, of course, you try to make it as efficient and effective as possible, but at the same time, you know, you have to put your hands up at some of the tremendous complexities that are associated with the upbringing of any given child. So, I mean, going back to this story here with teachers being the victims of bullies, it's not, I think we can see it through the same lens of, say, you know, if a student were to be bullied as well, because then this, if let's say a child is being bullied in school, this child will still have to face their bulliers or these bullies on a day-to-day basis. Bulliers? I'm just making up words as they go along.
Yeah, I hope you're not teaching English.
No, I'm not teaching English. Thank you very much. Yeah, no,
okay. Yeah. Well, we'll be back with more news and analysis after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.